One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice.
Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscience, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. Michael Eric Owens here.
And DT right alongside you.
Oh, man. It's always a pleasure to be back in your presence.
Yo, look, this is our last Black in Studios episode.
Well, folks,
I mean, not Black in Studios as a whole, but in our original location, our starting point.
Absolutely. And for you out there, our listeners that have not gotten the word, we're moving to a larger, if I can say, a more inclusive location where you can come out and if you just want to chill with us while we're trying to do our thing here on the mic.
You can watch Richard drink his special mix behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes. Just take all the pictures.
Out in the open with that. Doesn't mind watching.
Right. He's just trying to be that role model. But we're excited. It's a new chapter in Black in Studios. And if you haven't seen our podcasts that are out there, it goes the whole range of ideas.
It's fun. Man, this has been a therapy for me, I must admit.
It's not just our show, but listening to the other podcasters that we have and the passion.
Roxy by Design.
Oh, yeah.
Tiffany Hill.
Authentic conversations. And I mean, the Black Box itself with Richard doing his thing. I mean, it's just it's a variety of knowledge being shared. And if you have not gotten into Black in Studios, the whole array of what we offer, I'm gonna suggest that you do that. Fill your time with knowledge.
True that.
Knowledge. That's maybe
that's the occurring theme in our Black in Studios. Oh,
absolutely. That's a novel idea to fill your mind and your time with knowledge. I don't know if you saw this article, but I don't necessarily like to bring up stuff like this, but I was so appalled by it. Mm-hmm. You know, I just thought I just have to mention this thing in Dietrich, Idaho, where these three white football players, after practice, you know, this Black guy, they say he came out with his hands wide, his arms wide open, because he thought he was going to get a hug. And they attacked him and pulled down his pants and took a coat hanger and shoved it up in the rectum, folks. You heard me say that. I actually had to use that word. I'm just saying what they reported. And then some guy kicked it several times.
Oh, my God.
And, I mean, man, this is teenagers. I mean, last week we were talking about mentoring and who do you look up to. But just think about the family suing now. And what's interesting is that we see this consistent, I think, and what we're going to be talking about today, this vulnerability. And maybe we can keep this in mind when we go into our topic today. But this consistent, I think, onslaught of racism against some of the most, we would say, vulnerable people in our society. He was Black, but he was also disabled. Hmm. He was also disabled. And it says here that at his school, this lawsuit that his family has, according to the lawsuit, the alleged rape wasn't a one-off, but rather the culmination of months of racist abuse by white students against the boy who is Black.
So this wasn't the first time something had happened.
Was not the first time. And they continue in detail. The boy was taunted and called racist names by other members of the teams, which names include, get this, Kool-Aid, Chicken Eater, Watermelon, and Nigga. I mean, Kool-Aid. Is like offensive or something? Kool-Aid. Kool-Aid. You know, I'm like, so what do you do? Oh, man, that's them fighting words right there. Kool-Aid.
But, you know, it's funny how them little symbolisms control us, too, in the way we think about language. Like, somebody call you Kool-Aid, now you got to fight them. Like, no. Be smarter than the Kool-Aid commenter.
Right. Chicken eater.
Chicken eater.
I eat chicken, like, too,
I eat chicken, too. I actually had some last night. Right.
You're not offended by me saying you're a chicken eater, man? No, okay. No. Okay. And it goes on to say the civil complaint filed in the U.S. District Court in Idaho claims that one of the students charged with sexual assault displayed a Confederate flag and demanded the boy recite a racist song titled Notorious KKK.
Really? I wonder what the lyrics to that song
is. Is that like Notorious B.I.G. or something?
That's probably like the remix.
Like the remix.
But they spin on it.
Folks, listen. These things are happening in our country. I mean, this is not, we would like to think that this is a make-believe story. I mean, it's so sad and it's so hurtful. Disabled young man treated and abused in such way, probably traumatic for the rest of his life. Who were these kids looking up to? I mean, that's a question that we can toss out there. But we're going to take a break and stay with us. We're going to get into our topic today.
Oh, yes.
And we are looking forward to spending this time with you. We will be right back. DT, this segment is being brought to you by Selfie Moon. You know, we take those pictures, right? Uh-huh. That, you know, they all dark, man, and you can't even tell who you're trying to find the light, or you might even be in a I ain't gonna even say in a club, because might be in a club, let's say.
Professional events, right?
Exactly, right? And you're trying to get that one picture, man, capture that moment. Well, listen, Selfie Moon is what you want to buy, man. It goes right on your phone. All right, man.
You can get the perfect lighting.
It's a brand new product. Folks, go to theselfiegods.com. That is theselfiegods.com. And guess what? When you buy one of those selfie moons, you're supporting the One Mic, One Voice show. A little bit go back to us so that we can continue to do what we do.
Thank you so much.
My name is Kareem Muhammad, Executive Director of Teachers Appreciation Foundation. When I listen to podcast radio, I'm always tuned in to One Mic, One Voice. Thank you.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. Well, we're back, and our topic today is vulnerability.
All right. So by definition, you know, being vulnerable is being capable of or susceptible to being wounded or hurt, open to moral attack, criticism, temptation, open to assault, pretty much putting yourself out there for the world to criticize, to shame, to do all these things that are not always the easiest to do.
And I mean, it's you know, what stuck out in my head when you were reading the definition is this idea of being open to that.
Mm-hmm.
How many of us are open to being hurt? I mean, when we hurt, we build up walls, right? We wreck.
Defenses go up quickly.
Yeah, yeah. So how many of us are open?
In defense.
Right. Exactly. You see them coming a mile away, you know.
Yeah.
And we are closed off to people that truly love us.
Yeah.
That people that want to bless us and help us, but because of somebody else that hurt us, we didn't erect these walls that prevent people from getting into the real you and me. But if I'm truly vulnerable, though, I'm open to this.
Right. We have these sort of measuring sticks that we use to keep people at arm's reach, to keep people at bay, to help us further secure our wall. But like you said, they don't do us any justice when it comes down to the people who are really in our lives to be impactful, to try and help us get somewhere. And we're kind of blocking that energy or shutting them off in some way.
You know, and I mean, if you think about how much courage does it take, or maturity, or whatever we can toss into this bucket? What does it take to put yourself in a position to be hurt? And to say, well, okay, I may get hurt in this relationship, but I'm going to take this chance. And then if I do get hurt, I'm going to learn and grow from it.
So it's two parts, right? So the first part is kind of like that self-acceptance, saying to myself, you know, I know who I am. I know where I'm going. So I'm okay with the criticism. I'm okay with whatever somebody else may think about me or what I have to say as a result of opening myself up. But the second part is being able to understand that it's bigger than us, you know. I can be vulnerable because I'm setting an example for somebody else. You know, maybe in the larger scheme of it, it may look like it's about me or that I'm shaming myself or that I'm, you know, the sole purpose of this thing that I'm going through or whatever as an example, but it's really for somebody else. It's for a bigger purpose.
And you're right. I mean, if we were not vulnerable to each other, what would the world look like? Hmm. I mean, we would erect wall after wall. We would be further divided. I think some of the greatest, you know, relationships, whatever may have come out of that relationship, whether it was a tremendous idea or an innovation or a child or whatever came out of that relationship, it's because somebody decided to be vulnerable. Somebody decided to be open. Somebody decided to trust, right? Because when you trust a person, man, you didn't put yourself in a position to be crushed. Let's just be honest.
Put your heart on the table.
You didn't. Because I say to people all the time, trust. Listen, you get it right away. Usually, when you meet a person, it's there. You know, unless the person is crazy and acting, you're like, I don't know, this dude look crazy. You know, but usually you meet a person, you're like, okay, everything's fine. You trust. But then, once that trust is broken, it probably can never be repaired.
Because it give you those inklets of examples in your past when it hurt a little bit or when it wasn't comfortable to feel a certain way. And so automatically, like you said, once that trust has been tested and failed, you know, you automatically assume along the lines of your past that, you know, this is the way that everybody is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's never going to work out for me.
Right.
I've always been treated this way.
Then it turned into some type of self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. Victimization of the self. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna victimize me. I'm going to beat me up. I'm going to make me less than what I should be to myself. And then I didn't imprison myself, right? Then I'm caged up.
Yo, so I read this study a while ago. It's an old study, but this lady was doing research on vulnerability. And what she was trying to find out was, what was the difference between people who were open, who were what she called wholehearted, which means that they felt love and appreciation. And what was the difference between those type of people and the people that did not? And what would you guess that it was? People who felt love and appreciation and the people who did not. What would be the common denominator in that?
Well, I think the people would have to have experienced it before. Mm-hmm. They saw it, you see. They, as a child, that's what would be my guess.
She says that they felt like they deserved it. Mm. And that was the only difference between people who felt love and appreciation, felt that they deserved it. And so that goes back to the self-worth thing. You know, if I don't feel like I can trust anybody, I can, you know, feel love or appreciation, I don't feel that in myself even. I don't treat myself the best way as a result of those feelings. Yeah.
I mean, that mindset is kind of strange to me, though, because, if I think about it, I don't think I ever said to myself, like, I deserve this.
But in your actions, you do.
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. Probably. And to me, it's more like a respect thing, you know. I don't know if it's a love thing. It's kind of like a respect thing. Like, you're going to respect me, or I'm just going to, like, cut off your circulation or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe.
like that's you deciding. I'm not going to deal with people who don't treat me this certain way.
Absolutely.
Right? And so that's going back to you feeling like you deserve it, you know, because you know who you are. Yeah. And you're not going to accept anything less than what you feel you deserve from people.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't just walk in and say, you know, I deserve love. Mm-hmm. And but in giving, give me love.
In giving it and in receiving it, you practice and it grows you. And you're able to flex more than muscles that.
Because, I mean, it's a true, I think you're right on. Probably a lot of people feel like they don't deserve to be loved, you know, because of the hurts and the pains of their past and how they've been used and abused and treated. I think they feel like, you know, something's wrong with me. I've heard people say to me all the time, something, you know, something's wrong with me. It's the problem's in me, mm-hmm. because the way others treat them, you know, they value themselves through the eyes of others. Mm. And I think that mm-hmm. is terrible, because you have to have self-worth yourself. As you say, your actions should say, I deserve to be loved. I deserve to be respected. I deserve to be treated a certain way. And I say this all the time, folks. You deserve this simply because you are human. Mm. Since you are breathing, since you are walking and talking, you deserve the same things that everybody else deserves. And if anybody's devaluing you, you need to deal with that. Mm-hmm. Because that's not your issue. That's their issue. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And have and we use this word tolerance, but a no nonsense type of attitude about it.
Absolutely.
A no tolerance attitude about it.
Yes.
Because otherwise, what do? We continue to be caged in, we continue to keep the walls up, and we don't grow from that. We don't get anywhere from that.
How many people, man, I mean, there's no way we could figure this out. I mean, even if we took a national survey, people probably wouldn't be honest about it. But, I mean, how many people. I guess it's just a rhetorical question, but that are just caged in because they are so afraid of being open to be hurt, open to trust again. I mean, I think the number would be astronomical.
Yeah, we wouldn't believe it. We wouldn't believe how many people that we look at on the outside and assume about how respected they feel or how confident they feel when they're also too dealing with the same vulnerability issues that us as a whole are dealing with.
Now you just hit on something. Now let's make this personal now.
Okay.
Right. How many people in our own lives, the folks we work with, our family members that we are around all the time that are caged in and either we think they're open because they can play the part.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or we know they're so devastated that we simply can't encourage them and pick them up, so we just let them go along their way.
Mm-hmm.
How many?
Like you said, I think the number would be astronomical. I mean, it'd be high. I mean, not even that we had to draw some special statistic, but that we see this in relationships with people that we deal with, and in relation to ourselves and everybody else that's in the world, you know, we wonder how many would that be?
Yeah.
But we're all dealing with it at some level.
Yeah, because to some level, we all guard ourselves, mm-hmm. right? We, you know, in a second, let's talk about, you know, these things that I think in society we need to help us not be, you know, help us not to guard ourselves, you know, that we can be vulnerable, you know, for instance, when we deal with stuff like economics, mm-hmm. for instance, okay? Being open and not being, if I feel vulnerable if I can't pay my bills, right? Mm-hmm. If I can't keep food on my table, right? If I can't do things like that, then I feel like, I might feel like I'm about to get kicked out,
mm-hmm.
okay? So that does something. Pressure. That's a lot of pressure. That does something to my psyche.
Mm-hmm.
You think about the poor and the people that are in poverty, how vulnerable they feel in society because we have policymakers now. This is when we talk about the state and the national level. We have policymakers that don't even care about the citizenry's vulnerabilities.
Mm-mm.
You can be poor, okay, and be demon. So you're poor, you feel vulnerable, and you are vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
but you're also demonized,
mm-hmm.
okay? I mean, it's like
you're not even human no more. Right?
Exactly. And think about the person that doesn't have that, or the person, as we talked about last week, trying to have transportation, but depending on somebody else for transportation to get to their job. How vulnerable does that person mm-hmm. feel? What's this person just tells me? I ain't gonna take you no more. Okay, then right. I'm out. I lose my job. I can't take care of my family. People are living with this level of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Now, a person could come out and say, well, hey, look, I depend on you so much. Man, I don't know what I would do, DT, if you didn't pick me up. Man, this my family, my family, man, you are such a blessing to my family. Mm-hmm. But no, we just give you $5 or $10 for gas and go on because we don't want to admit that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that's show. I'm a man. Mm-hmm. I can't admit that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You blessing my family as another man. I'm supposed to have a car myself.
That pride get to kicking in. You know, man, I thought some time ago about if, and like you said, we won't always admit to another person that what level it is that we depend upon them or that we really need them to impact our lives. And for us, sometimes won't admit that we do stuff because there is an element of love in it. Mm-hmm. I did it because it was the right thing to do. Yeah. But man, look at the impact it made. Look at the action and expression of love I've shown to this other person. So on the other side, even we won't admit to ourselves the impact that we're really making on other people.
Yeah.
And vice versa, with that person being able to say, man, that really helped me out a lot. And thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's because, again, right, we see that as weakness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But they inbred in us from early because, you know, as a man, tell you, boy, don't be crying.
So you don't, man, don't cry.
Put your chin up. Show your shoulders back. Stand up straight. You know, these things that are a definition of man and a definition of, you know, this toughness we have to have, this lack of vulnerability we need to have. Because I think also is that when we see other people being vulnerable, we don't always respond in the correct way. It's more of a criticism than it is an acceptance.
Yeah.
And if I'm saying, man, you know, I noticed that when you were going through that situation, you started crying.
Yeah.
Crying like a little.
That's what I'm thinking to myself. Man up.
But that sighting you that I see of you being vulnerable, I don't deal with that myself, or do I express myself in that way. So I can't accept it from you as a result of that.
You know what's so funny, man, is and I'm going to speak for the black, well, I'm going to speak about the black community. I almost say I'm going to speak for the black community. I can never do that. But I'm going to speak about the black community. Why? Because I'm black, right? Let me say this. The only time you really get permission to cry as a man is at a funeral.
Mm-hmm.
That's someone, you didn't lost your boy or you didn't lost moms. That's like you get a pass there.
It's acceptable then.
You know what I mean? But if I'm hurt up at my job and I start crying, you be, man, what's up with Mike, man? Mike tripping. You know, man up, man. What you talking about? You need to go. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, these societal constructs.
People are like, man, you emotional.
Exactly.
It's like, are we all?
Right. I mean, it's and that when that shapes our reality, then of course I can't show a certain side of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And again, then I'm closed and then I'm not vulnerable. And I think true growth comes through being vulnerable.
Mm.
I mean, if you don't fail, you never know what it feels like to succeed.
Yeah, man, you gave me a good token of knowledge, man. One day we were having lunch, and I was telling you about, you know, how I kind of get down on myself about writing, you know, just being more expressive. And I think that's something that I have struggled with for so long because I felt like I've been through a lot of things that were really, like, deep, that touched me and affected me in a certain way. And to be able to express that, you know, one, I didn't really know what the right avenue was or how to really put those thoughts into a constructive type of platform. So I dealt with that, or what people may think if I actually put it out there like that. Yeah. You know, it's like we talked about these layers of ourselves that we kind of hide but are still there. We're just not putting them in the forefront. But you told me, man, that, you know, everybody else will always have something to say, you know, wherever it is that you decide to put yourself out there or whatever. And so to not do that to myself, and I've been a lot better about it, you know, because I do understand that, you know, everything ain't for everybody, you know, and I may not be for everybody, but I understand what I do is genuine, and I'm being more true to myself by expressing it that way than trying to keep it bottled up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's well said. I mean, we only give what we have received anyway.
Hmm.
Now, you may receive it through the eye gate, through the ear gate. You may have, you know, somebody may have passed it down to what, but you didn't create it. Okay. Hmm. You may have created something out of what you received, but the point is you received it.
Hmm.
And what you have to give, it's got to play on. Now, everybody's not going to hear that. Everybody's not going to receive that. You're just trying to connect with those that are open to that. And that's what that's about, man. I, again, as you said, and I tried to share with you, I mean, people are going to have problems with you when you're dead. I mean, let's be honest with you. I remember they say, yeah, people going to talk about you when you're dead, you know, that sort of thing. And so it's a never ending thing. But you said something very important. Being true to yourself, being true to yourself. I don't think people understand that, man. When you are true to yourself, you are vulnerable with yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, man, hold on, man. We about to get deep up
here. Let me get the meter out.
Because you know what? In life, folks, and we're going to take a break here in a minute. In life, we have erected walls within ourselves. Spaces, get this, within ourselves that we don't even want to go to. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We don't even want to open up. I can't talk about that. No. Man, that was too painful. That's a wall. Mm-hmm. You ain't learned from that pain. You ain't embraced that pain. Oh, I can't even deal. Oh, no, I don't even. No. You have erected a wall within yourself. You're not even vulnerable to yourself. And if you're not vulnerable to yourself, you definitely cannot be vulnerable with anybody else.
Right. Or respect that in somebody else.
Or respect that. Another
thing is, you know, I think about art, you know, and I feel like I'm an artist in a way because I see things in a certain way and I like to draw and all these other things that are artsy. But the thing about art to me is that, you know, after you finally get it off, you may have all these ideas about what you want to do and what you want it to look like and all of this. But you also have to deal with whatever that finished product is going to be. What the reaction is going to be from the people who see it. If it's a good response, then, you know, you tell yourself you did a good job. But if not, or if you get some kind of flack, then you go back into the kind of self-pity type of, oh, man, I should have. But it really don't matter, you know. The thing is, like you said, that it's not ours in the first place. Art is an expression, but when I give it away, it has more impact. I understand that it's not mine. I understand that it's bigger than me. I understand that by being able to give it to someone else who needed it, who could use it, it has more impact then than it just being some idea in my mind.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said, brother. And folks, hang in there with us. We got more going on in this dynamic conversation. We just going to move away for a little bit, and we will be right back.
This show is also sponsored by Vector Roofing. Do you hear that? The sound of hail. More importantly, the sound of money leaving your pocket. But that can be prevented with Vector Roofing. We provide free estimates and cover your deductible, giving you a roof for the stormy season. We work closely with your insurance company and walk you through each step of the way. Give us a call at 405-259-6463. That's 405-259-6463. Also, like and follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Vector Roofing.
Hi, this is Tiffany Hill, host of Authentic Conversations, a weekly motivational podcast where we discuss matters such as self-worth, relationships, parenting, professional development, physical, emotional, and spiritual health. You can find me on Facebook at Authentic Conversations by Tiffany Hill, on social media at @th_authentic, and you can also subscribe to Authentic Conversations on iTunes and Podbean, and the show is also available on blackinstudios.com. I look forward to connecting with you, and remember, to live authentically is the ultimate form of happiness.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscious. I'm going to tell you something about what you just said. A friend of mine was coming out with their first CD, and he wanted me to listen to it. You know, I dab around, you know, a little bit, man. I've been writing music since I was 17. And so I listened to it. I liked it, man. I said, yeah, I like it, man. He said, thank you. He said, I wonder, I'm worried that other people might not like it. I said, really? He said, yeah. I said, man, I'm kind of shocked over it. I said, really? You concerned about that? He said, yeah, why? I said, man, because you should have never wrote it with that in mind. I said, the fact that you completed it and that you satisfied with it, you done.
It's a wrap.
I never have been concerned about what I create, whether someone approves or disapproves of it. It is simply the creation thereof that brings the satisfaction, the beauty, the creativity, innovation, all of that. When that comes together, that's the reward.
Wow.
I mean, when you have like, you know, let's go back to Prince, an artist. Prince didn't make songs to get paid. I mean, he had something in him that he wanted to get out. Once that it was out, it was beautiful. Now, what happens to that thing when it's out there, that's in a whole different stratosphere, see? But the beauty is in the creation of it itself and the satisfaction that it came from you. It came from within, you see. That which wasn't seen became visible.
Wow.
That's what's wonderful.
Yeah, man, because just like you're talking about all of these, all the great artists and entertainers we've had over the course of time, when it was that they gave us their art, gave us their expression, you know, somebody needed that. And then as an artist, you gain more of a appreciation for yourself. You know, you'd be able to look at yourself and say, man, look, these are the things that I'm getting right. And if I continue to build on them, then they can be better. They could be greater. And we've seen the Princes, the Michael Jacksons, the Beyoncés, the Jay-Zs, the everybody who has put themselves out there like that to be vulnerable on that platform, get that reward that you talked about from for themselves.
Yeah, you're chasing you. Let's put it like that. You're not chasing anybody else or monetary value. You're chasing yourself. And to be honest with you, this vulnerability, we need each other. We need each other. The problem is that we are afraid to need each other. We're afraid to open up. We're afraid. And systemically, we talked about systemically, we do have a privileged class in the United States. And all around the world, you have privileged classes, okay, that they are less vulnerable, okay, because they don't worry about certain stuff. They're the privileged class. But they still have a sense of vulnerability, though. Their vulnerability sometimes comes into fear of losing what they have. So I can't let you into this corporate structure because you might figure this thing out. And I might lose out on, or we can't have that much competition or equal opportunity because all of a sudden now this minority race might start coming up. So I'm vulnerable because I fear losing what I have, even though I might have it all. I fear that. And so I have encaged myself. That's why a rich man can take a gun and blow his brains out. Right. He has encaged himself. You see. Some of the greatest actors were some of the most insecure people, fearful people in the world. Couldn't even be around people. Had to be on stage. Had to be performing. They were afraid to open up.
So I guess the other side of the vulnerability coin is if I am being expressive, you know, if this is indeed helping somebody else, how do I feel in those moments when I feel like I've given too much, I've put too much out there for people to criticize or to say that's not good enough? Or
I think you have to be, again, getting back to this idea of knowing who you are, knowing who you are, being vulnerable with yourself. If a person says something about me, listen, I've always said this, man. Okay, listen, folks, I've always said this. If you don't know me, and you say something about me, it don't matter to me. You say whatever you want to say. I'm just gonna be. It don't affect me one bit. You say, Michael is this and Michael's that.
Call you cool,
good or bad, whatever. Good or bad. It don't matter. He's the stupidest brother on the planet. You can say whatever if you don't know me, but if you know me, now if you say something like that about me, you will hurt me, because if you know me, I'm open to you. You know about me. I'm transparent to you. You're in my world. And so if you're outside of my world, whatever folks can say, hey, you don't know me. Why should I get offended by a person that don't even know me? Why should I get hurt about what a person said about me that doesn't even know me? I mean, it's ridiculous because the person does not know me. Their observation, you know what they see? They see a brother in a suit, brother driving a car, brother trying to do this. That's all they don't know me. So why should I be offended by anything they say to me? Never. You can talk about me till you blue in the face. I don't. It don't bother me one bit. Now, if you in my circle and you say something, now that's going to affect me because I'm like, hold on. You know me now, man. You supposed to be on my side picking me up. Now, don't. Okay, let me say this. I'm open to constructive criticism, the kind that shows me the way to go, but you're speaking to me because you love me. You're not trying to destroy me. There's a difference. You can criticize me and destroy me, or you can criticize me, teach me, and send me on my way wiser. That's the key if you're in the circle. But you can't get in my circle if you ain't going to, you know, if you're not going
to
do
Man,
right
I
anyway.
Man, I think it's beautiful in a way that we're able to build them type of relationships that you're talking about, the ones that do inspire us and bring us up. Because I know that even in the effort of us having these conversations, there is an element of confidence building that we do for each other.
Absolutely.
You know, and even to the point where if you say, look, man, DT, I don't think you should be wearing your socks like that. You know, I mean, this is like you said, I don't know how hard I'll take it, but I'll consider how I'm wearing my socks. Mike said my socks kind of. So I'm going to take a look down there and see what's happening, you know, but I'm also going to respect the fact that you were looking out for my best interest.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. And constituting a relationship like that, you can be vulnerable with people when there's trust. When there's no trust, you know, some of us have ruined our ability for people to be vulnerable with us. Let me give you an example. Okay. You know them. They're the Jekyll and Hyde of the workplace. You don't know what you're going to get from one day or the other. A person would never be vulnerable with that person simply because you know sooner or later you're going to get Jekyll and you're going to get Hyde. And it's not going to rub you the right way. So what you do is you erect a wall to protect you. Self-preservation, okay? I'm not saying it's the right thing because your original definition talked about how open and willing we are to be hurt. But it did say open and willing to be a fool.
You know what? It's funny that you say that because sometimes other people will even help you build up that wall. And you made the example about the coworker, so somebody could say, man, you know what, look, you might not want to be telling Gina everything. She can't keep it under her hat. You know, you might want to watch what you say around this person or that person. They kind of like helping you build up these defenses against people before you even have an opportunity on your own to get to know them.
Absolutely.
And sometimes that's an unfairness, too, when you're dealing with new people or trying to establish new relationships or trying to decide for yourself who it's okay to be vulnerable with.
Yeah. We have people right now that are listening to us, DT, that are in friendships, relationships that are afraid to open up to each other. I mean, we have people right now that are listening, I can guarantee you, that feel like the world is against them, like everything they try to do, something's always going to go wrong.
Just can't get it right, huh?
Just can't get it right. They have imprisoned themselves, and they don't know how to get out. I mean, that's the sad. And some of this has been inflicted upon us. Let me toss myself in this equation. Some of us, we didn't do it to ourselves. We met somebody, and they treated us like we was zero, less than zero. And then we met somebody else. And they treated us like we were less than zero. And by the third or fourth time, we started believing we were less than zero. Okay. And so somebody put us there, but we're trying to figure out how to get ourselves out of this predicament because I don't want to be hurt again, but I don't want to avoid every opportunity that I might have to reach my full potential, to do something with my life. So what do you say to that individual?
It goes back to that looking in the mirror. We talked about kind of self-love, self-awareness, being able to look at yourself and say, man, this is me.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of what John think, you know, regardless of how many times somebody have mentally tried to beat me down. And I've seen examples in myself every day of how strong I am, of how resilient I can be if I do these little things that help me stay empowered, help me stay focused, help me stay motivating myself to achieve things.
You because but, your strength through all of this mm-hmm. is what you pointed out speaks to your resilience, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly. And like I'm saying, you know, having that looking glass first, you know, based off what everybody else is saying, mm-hmm. everybody else that made me feel zero-ish, you know, to look at myself and see what I want to take away that I can start adding some things mm-hmm. to it. Mm-hmm. I can be one tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I can be two on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. By Wednesday, I'm up to seven. You know, I'm not zero no more, but yeah. slowly I'm getting somewhere. Yeah. Slowly I'm able to build myself up to my potential and my characteristics of who I think I am.
Rebuilding you. Mm-hmm. Doing the work on you is what you're talking about.
So that would be my first step, you know, mm-hmm. to people who have been so beat down that they've only considered what other people have said about them and used that as their looking glass when they look at themselves.
Well put. Well
to, put. To subtract all the negatives and start mm-hmm. adding on to yourself.
That's beautiful, man. We're going to continue in that conversation. You said the first step. We're going to continue in that. But first of all, before we do that, I want to go back a little bit. We're going to take a break here. I want to go back a little bit and talk about the greatest foe of
us all
being vulnerable, which is fear. And we're going to address that when we come back.
My name is Kareem Muhammad, Executive Director of Teachers Appreciation Foundation. Join us Sunday, July 31st, 2016 at the Galardia Country Club in Oklahoma City for the Gala Fundraiser. For tickets, log on to TAF5.org. That's TAF5.org. Or you can email us at TAFteam5, that's the number 5, at gmail.com. Or you can give us a call at 405-532-3488. See you guys there.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. So we talked about this idea of fear being the biggest enemy or foe of being vulnerable. You know, as kids, when we come into this world, there is such an openness.
Oh, so free.
I mean,
so
we don't see color. You know, we don't see poverty or wealth. We don't see division. You know, we just want to just go out and just play, mm-hmm. laugh. Mm-hmm. Think about a child that comes into the world free, completely vulnerable. Mm. Right?
Right. You know, as parents, in talking about that vulnerability, sometimes we are overly protective of this kid. That is, you know, vulnerable. We want to make sure that they go to the best schools, that they're protected in education, that they go to Harvard by 16, you know, that they wear the best, you know, these things that we try to do to safeguard even the kids before they experience the real world. And I'm doing air quotes right now, but you can't see that. You know, so the things in the real world are scary, are things that we should protect children from in some instances, but like we talked about, the resilience is that kid is already equipped to go through stuff, you know, to go through something tough, to be put in situations where the situation is not ideal all the time.
You know, you are so correct. As we grow, you know, parents try to protect us. As we grow, we learn and we have experiences. And some of those experiences are not positive. Mm-hmm. They cut deep.
Uh-huh, right? Because they're those honest moments that really teach us about life, you know, and somebody trying to always keep us out of harm's way, they do us a disservice sometimes. You know, sometimes it's a good thing, sometimes not so much. But,
you know, it's interesting that, you know, I'm going to read this quote. It says, "As we search for answers to life's hurts, we often begin to believe that we were responsible for them." Mm. So as we begin to try to figure this thing out,
and
why people have
are.
Yeah, well, we try to figure this thing out and say, well, why did I go through this? Or why was I hurt like this? And what was my, What did I do wrong in this situation? I mean, we oftentimes blame ourselves for that, you know, like we were a victim. And I was saying to a person the other day, DT, I was saying that not you hear in situations where, yeah, it took to the, you know, not always, mm-hmm. not always. OK, the woman and I use a really, I want to say, harsh analogy. Mm-hmm. I said a woman that is raped is never at fault. Mm-hmm. It's the rapist. Mm-hmm. You heard people say, well, she wanted it. You heard people say, well, she shouldn't have been walking down there. It was not her fault. Some things happen in life, and I would often say a great percentage of things happen in life where we share no blame for what happened. But many times, DT, we take all the blame. Mm-hmm.
I think a part of it is like that honesty that is missing. You know, sometimes we feel to blame because we've only, like you said early in the show, been able to do what we know. And so rather or not, if it was the best thing or not, we've done it anyway. And as a result, sometimes we get negative outcomes. And then we go to blaming mama and daddy and all these people who were telling us that they loved us all the time, but also keeping things away from us that could have helped us out or could have helped us stay out of certain situations.
Yeah.
So I think the responsibility, I guess, I'm speaking of is that we do feel that guilt once we realize that we've been lying to ourselves and lying to other people just to kind of take away the harsh part of life.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. The deception that we play on one another. The fear of vulnerability is ultimately a fear of rejection or abandonment. Mm-hmm.
And think about how many people deal with abandonment. You know, even from children, people have felt like, mom wasn't there enough. Daddy left us hanging. And they grew up through their life thinking that that's their life, you know, thinking that that's the norm for everybody, and it's not. But it's also not something that we should place blame on ourselves because of.
Man, you know how many people in this country alone, let's talk about young people for a minute, that are going to school but are homeless. Okay, they're with their mother, with their father. I mean, what? That's almost like the most vulnerable in our society. I mean, there is no social structure there to carry them, to protect them, until they can get to a point where they even believe in their own ability. Mm. To be open, to trust, because the life that they have been handed, the cards that they have been dealt, man, it's such a difficult blow. I think about that in life. I didn't experience that. You know, I grew up in a hood, but we had food on our table. Okay. I laid my head down on the same bed every night. Mom and daddy was in the household. That world that people are coming up in is so difficult, DT, that when we talk about being vulnerable and being open, they are living. They were birthed the most vulnerable in our society. And the system exploits them to the max. Mm-hmm.
I even think about the war veterans, man, that we see have given their lives to service and military and all these things, and then they get back home, and they don't have the supports that they were promised when they got in. You see them holding up the signs on the sidewalk, you know, U.S. veteran will work for food. And it's like, man, that's a veteran. That's somebody who fought for the country. Mm. Why didn't they have anything in place for him? Mm. You know, why am I pulling out $5 out of my pocket to give to a U.S. veteran who gave his life for the country? You know, it's like, did we pay him already? Didn't we have something set up for him already?
Yeah, that is a, as we reach back into, and we didn't title it this way, but the state's responsibility. We talked about policy making and decisions that protect the most vulnerable among us. And we don't have systems. I mean, we are all dealing with vulnerability, but there are some systemic things that expose us to more peril than others. Mm-hmm. And as you talk about our veterans, and me being a veteran myself, it's heart-wrenching to know that you can go and give 4, 8, 20 years of your life and come back and be invisible.
Mm. I mean, they don't have mental health services. I mean, these little things that could make such a big difference. Like you said, systemically, it just feels like we dropped the ball on some of it. But in talking about the vulnerability, I don't see, I guess coming from a veteran, what hope you will feel in moving forward. You know, you've done the highest deed in American culture to some people's point of view, giving your life to the service and still not had anything to back you. And
let me tell you a sad story with a good ending. When I got out the Navy, I was an engineer in the Navy. I got out and went back to school. I didn't get any credits for my Navy career. Mm. I started at the bottom. I had given 13 years of my life. I had taught, get this, I had taught at the engineering school, Advanced Engineering School at Great Lakes. I wanted to go in the teacher's program. They wouldn't give me one credit transferred in from the military.
Wow.
I started at the bottom. Now, think about being in combat and coming back, thinking about having PTSD and coming back, having mental health issues and coming back. Here was a cat that came back that was relatively sane. I don't know if, mm-hmm. you know, some people might question that, but it was a cat that came back, still had to start at the bottom. And what I'm saying to you is, yes, what hope do you have in that situation? You have very little, because you've sacrificed for your country. And in some regards, your country has not been there for you. Folks, we're going to take one more break, and we're going to be right back.
This is Richard Taplin, host of The Black Box and also the producer here at Blacken Studios. I want to tell you thanks for supporting all of our shows here at Blacken Studios. Please be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Blacken Studios. And also go by our website, blackenstudios.com, to find all of our podcasts, such as One Mic, One Voice, The Roxy by Design Show, The Elijah Bailey Show, The Gamer Stand Podcast, The Authentic Conversations, The Radical Harmony Plus, and also my favorite, The Black Box. You can also email us at podcast@blackenstudios.com. And remember, it's Blacken.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. You know, hey, as we close this out, you know, we would be remiss if we didn't make this thing personal. And as two black men living in the United States, there comes with it a level of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Simply because the way we live, if you think about it, we've seen what happened to Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, and the likes, right? We know the statistics about mass incarcerations. We know people have been on death row, and DNA has acquitted them. We know that. Many times, what did the suspect look like? Well, he was black, you know, he was tall, you know. We know the idea that somehow, you know, our criminality, our desire for criminal behavior is higher than others simply because of the skin that we're draped in. We live in a society where simply because of the way we look, we are more vulnerable. We're less protected. How do you deal with that?
I know who I am, first of all. So that's like we've been talking about, like one of the biggest things, man, just building up a comfortability with yourself. Mm-hmm. And I posted on Facebook a while back about this kind of masking we do. Mm-hmm. One, because people don't really know who we are. And then part of it is us wanting to you know, hide certain parts of ourselves from people just because we don't know what they're going to think about us or what they already perceive about us. But personally, man, I've had several situations where I walk into a situation and it's like I'm thinking to myself already, like, man, these cats don't know me, man.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, I don't know how far we're going to get, mm-hmm. but if it has anything to do with them being resistant mm-hmm. based on what they think I look like mm-hmm. or just being a black man, what that means to them, then we're not going to go very far because it's going to take some time for us both to build up that trust, to build up that relationship, to build up that vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And so it's not oftentimes that I'm always just open from the beginning too, because you have to get to know people.
Yeah.
You know, you have to decide for yourself if this is even something that, or even people that you want to be dealing with, you know, that yeah. you want to be vulnerable with, or that mm-hmm. if they're even worthy of that from you.
Yeah.
And so for myself, you know, being in those situations, it's just a matter of having a comfortability with myself and just assessing the situation from there to see how other people will respond to that.
Yeah. The awareness of this vulnerability in society and in every, I guess, every sector, every spot, every space, the sense that you are a black man. And what comes with that is,
man, I just have to laugh so many times, it's sickening, really. You know, like when I think about it, like when I'm really like to myself, like, man, my existence is really sickening, mm-hmm. you know.
It's troubling to you.
To the point where I'm having to learn how to navigate the world based on my skin tone.
Yeah.
You know, like this is a strategy that I have to come up with just because I look like I look.
Absolutely.
And that's sickening to me. You know, that's like an illness that I would have to wake up every day and deal with the world while also trying to deal with myself, you know, because the world haven't accepted me. So I'm having a hard time accepting myself and how to deal with the world as a result of that. But man, it's troubling.
Yeah, and you talk about strategy, and that's, you know, that's really a great way to put it, because I'm always trying to compensate for their weakness and their inability to see me as me. Mm. So somehow I have to appeal to your fragility, because see, you just can't take me for me.
Can't take the full Michael.
You can't. You should be able to, because Michael is no different than anybody else. But in your mind, I am different. And in your mind, my passion and my charisma might be aggressive to you because of my skin tone. Mm-hmm. So I have to figure out how to navigate around to. You know what's so funny is, I'm the vulnerable one, but the vulnerable one is trying to protect you. Mm. Mm. Isn't that something? I'm trying to protect you, because if I don't protect you, you're going to place me in a category that might destroy my career, mm-hmm. might get me fired. You understand? Because of your weakness. Mm-hmm. But I'm the vulnerable one, though. See?
Wow.
I mean, it's deep. But this is what we experience as black men each and every day in America. And I'm going to tell you like this. This is something you can't comprehend if you're not in this skin. I don't care what anybody says. You can't feel it. And I'm not saying the quote unquote is a black thing you want to understand. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying this is a black man thing. And if you're not a black man, you don't understand what it's like. It is a very difficult life. Now, let me say this, as I always got to say this. I'm black and I don't want to be anybody else. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Love my skin tone, love who I am, love what I see in the mirror. Don't get it twisted. I don't want to be anybody different. I'm saying what comes along with being in America is a challenge with being a black man. That's all I'm saying. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely know what you're saying. Also, black man, are dealing with those same struggles. I mean, and I just, man, you know, like, man, you have to laugh to keep from crying. Yeah, you know, like, seriously, do. Like, this is such a big joke, you know? And I'm like thinking to myself on a daily basis, like, man, how do we get here, you know? Yeah. And then still, after all this time passed, and we know that we are all dealing with the same type of stuff, and we still haven't let any level of empathy into our hearts to say, you know, well, let's deal with this. Let's figure out what it is about us all that we really can deal with and move and grow from.
And, you know, I mean, we've talked about the many faces of vulnerability, from the individual to relationship to corporate to being a black man, from the state level of vulnerability, being a veteran. I mean, there's many ways, many faces of vulnerability. But I think I want to read something here that I think is pertinent really to what you just brought up, DT. And it says this: loving ourselves is one of the toughest lessons we will ever face. Loving ourselves. And this is me talking, because if we love ourselves, we will love someone else. But it said, the author goes on to say, we all have faults, imperfections, embarrassing stories, and past mistakes we wish we could forget. We are insecure, awkward, desperately wishing we could change certain things. That's human nature. But the trick is to realize that everyone feels this way. No matter how successful, how beautiful, how perfect someone appears, he or she has the same very awkwardness, insecurity, and self-doubt. Learning to love ourselves is the toughest lesson we will ever face.
Connectedness is what I hear when I'm hearing those words, because, man, we have to be able to connect, one, you know, with ourselves, that self-love that the article talks about, to be able to connect with other people. And that feeling of connectedness is what makes life, quote-unquote, good, or makes us feel, quote-unquote, good about who we are and what we're doing, because we see the impact in it. And we see how we are connected through those feelings of vulnerability and through those feelings of insecurity that everybody is dealing with at their own level.
Yeah, you're right. Acknowledging
so
those
things. So we
all
connected still. Yeah. But
yeah. Acknowledging those things about ourselves, being true to ourselves. I mean, this is something that we've hit on past episodes. And loving yourself.
Being authentic.
Loving yourself means you realize that you are important. You embrace your past. You don't run from it. You embrace your past. You stop trying to prove your wealth or your value to someone. You have value.
You're enough already.
Exactly. You are. I like that, brother. You are enough already. Stop erecting walls within yourself. Let be vulnerable with yourself. Let those walls fall down within you. If you building up walls in yourself, you definitely gonna build up walls against me. If you let those walls fall down, then you may be able to look at me and go, you know what? That's okay. I can walk with him. Mm-hmm. Okay? I can get to know him. Okay? It might not turn out good. I don't know. You know, but it might be beautiful. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I'm open. I'm vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Because within this relationship, we both will grow.
We create so much opportunity for each other in those times we can be vulnerable. Because we were just sitting here before we got started, you know, sharing a few blackmail things.
Absolutely.
You know, and just out of it, you know, there's a level of trust there. There's a level of vulnerability there, even when we're expressing ourselves to each other.
Yes.
But at the end of it all, there's the element of love that keep it together. And it's not this chaotic kind of conversation that, yeah, I'm being vulnerable with you, but I know in the back of your head you probably tearing me down and saying,
"Man, I can't believe it.
I can't believe Richard. I can't believe Richard said he drank three of them special drinks every day. Right. I thought it was just one, you know." But like I'm saying, yeah. It's just we grow out of that vulnerability, just being able to kick the ideas, and it's healthy, man. It's really healthy.
It is, and I know, you know, this is a really deep topic because. In our society, people are suffering, and we can talk about the political realm and, you know, societal factors, but this gets down to the individual level. And when people are suffering, people make up society, people make up the citizenry, people make up the government, people make up companies. And so when it gets down to the individual, yourself, your colleague, we need to be able to grow and progress in a way that makes our world better, folks. Because as always, history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided people? Yes, history will speak of us.
We can make a difference if we try. We can beat the change that's in our lives. All we gotta do is work together. We gotta raise our children better. We gotta stop the hate, and spread the love.
One mic, one voice, you can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice, you can change the world, it's your choice.
One
mic, one voice, you can change the world, it's your choice.
One
mic, one voice, you can change the world, it's
your choice.
Today's broadcast is being brought to you by Blacken Studios. To learn more about Blacken Studios, please visit them at blackenstudios.com or visit them on their Facebook page, Blacken Studios. Today's broadcast is also being brought to you by Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. To learn more about Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, please visit their website at perrypublishingandbroadcasting.net. The opinions of the One Mic, One Voice show do not reflect the views of Blacken Studios or Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show.